They were wonderful people, very conservative in everything, and I did enjoy working with them. When the war ended and we could look at things a little more calmly, they asked me to be their full-time director of research. They wanted a full-time chap in a white smock, and I said no, I could not be, and they did find someone else who stayed a couple of years. Meanwhile, however, I mentioned the end of the war. I did send over one of my students who came to me when he was mustered out of the army. He had a bachelor's degree, and he went to work, became ultimately the manager of the Brooklyn Refining, and now is vice president in charge of all production for the American Sugar Refining across the waters, now called AmSTAR, AmSTAR. The sugar refining did, however, support two theses research here at Poly, one of which was on a method which we developed, that is, I had a doctoral student develop a process of removing the impurities from sugar, from the raw sugar, which is brought up from the sugar plantations in the tropics and then refined here in the continental United States. That has 3 or 5% of impurities, and we found that if these were boiled, if the raw sugar was washed with boiling methanol, to a smaller extent ethanol, which would have been the more desirable alcohol to use, these impurities could be taken off, and a 99.97% sugar would result. The unfortunate thing was two bad things. The first was the fact that a trace of some dark material we never were able to analyze there, so that the sugar can never be crystal white, and that is almost necessary. However, for sugar syrups and for canning food products and other places where the sugar goes immediately into other products, this would be quite satisfactory. The second one was that we found the best material for use was methanol. And even though it has a low boiling point, and even though when dried after the washing, there is a general feeling that no food product should at any time come in contact with methanol. And although on the contrary, at that time, people used benzene for extracting soybeans. And the sugar refining company, however, never being conservative, never wanted to go to bat with the government in that point. The equipment, however, for the refining would have been only 15-20% as expensive as their present processing, and for an expansion would have been a good thing. However, sugar refining has been a dwindling industry in more recent years, for the last 20 years, as people have cursed sugar as being a worthless food, while of course it is one of the cheapest and best food products. It is now removed by every diet conscious practitioner. We did also another thesis on this. We developed a new and better process for the refining of sugar as presently practiced with bone char, which is a form of adsorbing material which absorbs impurities. This was a means of processing the bone char, making it better and using less and so on. There again, the sugar refining company never was interested in going to the nuisance of changing plants or modification of anything. I'm not sure whether we ever got a patent on that. We did get patents on the sugar refining by use of methanol, and those patents were then followed in Japan with the people that I met in Japan in the early middle 50s, and a pilot plant was built there, and the process was proven to be very economic, the Japanese health people said, here, this is developed in America, they will not use it in America, probably because of the toxicity of methanol, so we will not consider it. So after the plant had been built, and the material showed to be just what we said, the thing was washed down the drain. The interesting thing was that the 3 or 4% of the impurities include a lot of vitamins, and we were able to separate the vitamins and other valuable products in that.
The next topic I'd like to move on to is the idea of using temperature differences in the ocean as an energy source.
And yes.
I did quite a bit of work on that.
Yes, I have been interested in this since my days in Ann Arbor at the University of Michigan, when I first heard of the idea of utilizing the temperature difference between warm surface water and the cold water deep below the surface. Thermodynamically, of course, any time one has a medium or two media at different temperatures, one can take advantage of the heat which is involved between these two temperatures in order to convert that into mechanical energy. And of course, many ingenious devices have been developed. One of the ingenious devices so developed deals with the ocean thermal temperature differences. And this was first realized 100 years ago as being a source of tremendous amounts of thermal energy and possibly, therefore, of mechanical energy. At a later time, in the middle 20s, a Frenchman by the name of Georges Claude, who was then quite an old man, but who had had a long years of ingenious developments, including the neon sign, and at an earlier date, other ingenious developments. He, however, came to America in the middle 20s to obtain money to build a plant in Cuba, north coast of Cuba, to utilize the fact that the surface temperature of the water may have been at about 30 degrees higher temperature than the water on the ocean floor several thousand feet below. I think, looking back, that he was probably in this country from France collecting money for building the plant, but anyway, he came to the University of Michigan when I was a graduate student, and I helped him in putting up rather simple equipment for demonstrating this principle before an auditorium filled with people interested in seeing it. Two vessels, large vessels, carboys, were set on the lecture table with temperatures corresponding to the surface temperature of tropic waters and also to that deep on the ocean floor. A small turbine was connected to the vapor space above the warmer water corresponding to the surface water, and this was evacuated so that ultimately this water was boiling at a very low temperature, approximately we'll say 80 to 85, 80 or more thereabouts degrees Fahrenheit. The vapors at highly highly attenuated or very low density went through the turbine, turned the turbine wheels, passed on to a condenser which was cooled by the cold water from the other carboy. Suitable thermometers on large scales showed the relative temperatures. The turbine had a little electric generator, and that was connected to a small light bulb. The lights went off in the auditorium, and the light bulb lit with energy developed from this vaporization of the of water at the temperature of surface tropic waters of the ocean. Everybody cheered. Claude did get the money, did build the plant. Unfortunately, it was wrecked before showing that it was, before being a real success. A hurricane hit that part of the Caribbean, and no longer was there any indication. At a later time, in the 50s, no, in the late 60s, the idea was revised. And I had always been interested in it because of my early interest in evaporation techniques. We did with friends persuade people with money in the Bahamas to put up money to build a small plant. It was only to be 10,000 kilowatts or something like that, which would use the warm surface water off the west end of New Providence Island as the source of the heat and as the boiling water to supply the low pressure, very low pressure steam. This then would be passed through the turbine and be cooled by water that would be drawn up from the depths of what is called the tongue of the ocean. The tongue of the ocean, which is shown on maps in my collection going back a couple of hundred years, is a very deep spot in the ocean, many miles wide, running a hundred miles or more north and south, and it is the part of the cycle of the Gulf Stream, cold water coming down from the Arctic at the low level of the surface of the bottom of this Atlantic Ocean, goes through this tongue of the ocean, then enters the southern part of the Caribbean, goes around of the Gulf of Mexico, goes around the Gulf. And then comes out on the east side of Florida, goes north to form the Gulf Stream, which Benjamin Franklin first described from a scientific standpoint 200 years ago. this water is in such volume that if only a very small fraction of its thermal energy could be used to, I have to recast the sentence, if only a very small part of the energy in the surface water could be distributed or given up by this cold water stream, there, and with the ordinary thermal efficiency, there would be enough power generated to supply the whole United States with electricity. This is quite impossible from a practical standpoint because of the tremendous amounts of water, the many cubic miles of water that would have to be handled daily in order to extract the low value energy from the surface water and discharge it then to the low temperature of the water at the ocean floor, say at the bottom of the tongue of the ocean, period. We did make careful engineering designs, hired a small submarine, rented a small submarine. One of my friends who lived in the Bahamas and was a top-notch engineer who was generating the proposal compressed his 6 foot six height into this little 8 foot diameter submarine and went down to along the ocean floor to make a profile that would have to be adopted by the that have to be followed by the cold water pipe. As I remember, the cold water pipe would have had to been about 40 feet in diameter, even for this relatively small plant, which indicates the tremendous volumes of water that would have to be handled in order to generate any practical amount of electricity. We there in the Bahamas were hopeful, however, not only of generating electricity, but we would have condensed this steam, low pressure steam, in such a way that we would have fresh water or distilled water which would be sold to the Nassau there on New Providence Island, since they have a very insufficient amount of water for the population there and for the tourists. Unfortunately, the project never was built because just at that time there was a political turnover in the Bahamas and to a semi-socialist government, and the capitalists who had backed the project decided it was too risky to have first the risky technology or the unproven technology, and secondly a unhappy political climate.
Would it be possible to turn the fan down just a little bit?
No, I have to turn it, that is a little about turned off. Does it come through badly?
It's better without.
Yeah, of course.
What was the reason for developing this? Was there a company behind this, or were you doing this on your own?
I guess it was my friend. Well, there were several of us that were interested in and talked about this, and my friend in the chemical engineer in New Providence Island had friends with considerable funds as who were the group that had developed New Providence Island as a touristic attraction and who owned large quantities, large areas of land in the western part of the island. So it was not any large company, but it was an engineering firm, and actually the amount of money we spend outside of our own time and efforts was a relatively small amount. Although it was a very dramatic idea. At a later time, I developed this idea further with another group wherein another value was to be utilized. The deep sea water is very rich in biological nutrients. Fish die, seaweed dies, everything settles to the bottom of the ocean, and a large amount of that goes into solution in the form of soluble nutrients containing both the various nutrients necessary for plant life particularly. Therefore, if the cold water, after it is heated in going through the condensers to condense the fresh water, which is then sold for drinking water, comma, the cold water may be used in fish ponds of various types. That requires a chain, a biological chain, which would start with plant life that will photosynthesize and develop a plant structure. That is best a single cell protein, it may be called, of various species of single cell life, and these then can be fed to various types of fish life, suitably strainers of the type of clams or oysters, which strain the the single cell protein life, and therefore grow. In another experiment, which I worked on this at a much later time, a small pilot plant was built in one of the U.S. Virgin Islands, with only a 2 or 3, 4 inch suction lines down to the ocean floor, and no attempt was made for power recovery or for making fresh water. But here, the deep sea water was brought up, put into tanks, large concrete tanks, and these concrete tanks, 3 or 4 feet deep, received the full tropic sun, and were fed with a inoculation of the single cell organisms, which then in a matter of 3 or 4 hours in the sunlight would utilize practically 100% of the nutrients, and the clean water, that is the water, crystal clear water that had been pumped into the tanks, would turn a color about like beer and be somewhat muddy in appearance due to the single cell organisms which had formed as a by this photosynthesis. This water then was pumped through another series of shallow tanks, which contained boxes with trays on which were thousands and thousands of clams. They strained again in a matter of a few hours 99%+ of the single cell organisms or plants, and developed at a very rapid rate. Oddly enough, no one has ever been concerned with breeding clams, and very little was known. But it was found in these experiments that the clams some clams would grow at a rate of 100 times that of others. And what was done here was a ordinary screen or riddle, R-I-D-D-L-E, was used to separate the small clams from the bigger ones after some months, and that allowed the larger ones to grow faster, of course. The smaller clams were put through a hammer mill and fed to lobsters, so that the cycle was continued up. The main product would be the clams. Oysters also can be developed. The most the work was done with clams. Like all animal life, the clams have excrement. And the water going out from the clam breeding tank then was passed through a third tank, and there a form of seaweed that has particular value for the extraction of different materials was grown, feeding with the biologic wastes of the clams. And the effluent from that was, of course, then returned to the ocean, practically pure of biological materials or of nutrients. A paper on this was in the magazine Science some years ago. I'll put the reference. That was an interesting thing.
Has this concept been followed up at all?
I got a patent on it, and had some discussion with a company in Germany who had had developed a thermal intensifier system whereby they could take the warm seawater from the surface of the ocean and heat it another 10 or 20 degrees Fahrenheit by passing it through some special passing it through some tanks that absorb the sunlight especially effectively. They fiddled with the idea, and a company in Japan did, but I have long since to spend any time or interest in it. The aspect of it that would be most profitable is obviously the making of food. That would be maybe 10 times as valuable as the water, and the water would be 10 times as valuable as the power. So while I had been originally interested in the water or the power, or in reverse direction, the other the biological aspects were really out of my field. So I haven't done anything of it for this.